Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Forever Dog. You can listen to this podcast ad-free on Forever Dog Plus by signing up at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. And make sure to follow us on social at Forever Dog Team and check out all of our podcasts at foreverdogpodcasts.com. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater with Kelly Nugent and Lindsay Kaytai, reading Hop Frog by Edgar Allan Poe. Welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow readings with lowbrow commentary. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kaytai.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And we are reading another Poe story today. Just me and Kelly hanging in the stewed.
Two lades hanging in the stewed.
Two ladies talking about Poe.
We're talking about hop frogs, my favorite kind of frog.
The best. Of all the frogs?
Hop frog.
Hop frogs.
I bet you there's like someone out there that like knows that like hop frog is like a euphemism for something. And they're like, you idiot. Don't you know?
Hop frog's a dick.
A hop frog's like a dick when it's like a half chub.
Nasty.
It's like when you get a half chub, like when you're watching a Cruel Intentions with your parents.
Everybody knows dudes.
Everybody
are
knows.
Like so turned on by Ryan Phillippe. Like transforming as a human and like turning away from his life of craven hedonism. What a fucking turn on.
Yeah. When he stops being a bad boy to be a good boy for Reese.
I fucking love good boys.
I love good boys. You got me talking about good boys, baby.
Not proud boys. Distinction.
No. Excuse. I'm
Excuse,
sorry.
No.
Excuse.
Good boys, not proud.
Good boys, not proud. I prefer that they're very embarrassed.
I want deep shame.
Deep shame good boys.
Shamed by their boyhood. I have been trying to like find a way to make this joke on Twitter, so I'm just going to give up and I'm going to talk everybody through it right now.
Maybe we can get closer to it.
Okay. We don't even have to because it'll get the joke across as much as I need it to.
Okay.
All right. So you know how where Proud Boys take their name from?
Actually, no.
Really? Oh, yeah. This is going to be a delight to tell
what
you
What did they take it from?
Here's where they take their name from.
Here's where they take their name from. Mary.
I'm Mary.
That's my Paul Hollywood impression. Mary.
So they take the name of their little club from a line in Disney's Aladdin Broadway show.
Okay.
And it's something like, Mama, aren't you proud of your boy?
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
From the Aladdin Broadway show?
Yes. Not from the movie.
So it's an original song for the
Broadway show.
What a niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that 96% of Broadway audiences are filled with alt-right people?
The alt-right loves Disney Broadway.
Disney Broadway specifically.
Specifically.
Beauty and the Beast. Aladdin.
Brief appearance of Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did not last long. Lion King.
Newsies. Mm. All right. So I'm gonna double check.
The Proud Boy thing?
Yeah. I'm going to make sure what the lyric is. I mean, I definitely know that that's what it's from. But yeah. Named after the song... Proud of your boy.
Seriously?
And the, yeah, Proud of Your Boy is a song written by Howard Ashman and composed by Alan Menken, which how dare you take Ashman and Menken
taking them
and
down.
Turn it into the name of your white supremacist group. It was cut from the movie only to be brought back for the adaptation, stage musical adaptation. He seeks a better life to make his parents proud. He sings Proud of Your Boy, and that is...
Was it cut because his parents are like a non-thing in the story, in the movie?
Probably just for length, and that was the least memorable one, is my guess.
Yeah.
So here's the joke I've been trying to make on Twitter, is that my female counterpart to the Proud Boys is just called those three girls who are in love with Gaston.
I think that was you just it. Did it. I think
yeah, that's
do,
what I'm saying.
I think you could have just tweeted that.
No, because I'd have to you walk have to, everybody here's the through thing. What it is a joke based on.
You know what? You
so
should
this
make
was
it,
the only way.
No, it would be so funny if you made it like a 47 tweet exactly. long thread.
Okay, so here's my joke
like,
thread.
Did like the whole thing, like just like a history of the Proud Boy thing.
Uh-huh.
All the way. And then the very last one is just that. That's very funny. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know what? There is a one-off Alan Menken song. I wonder if I talked about this already. And it was written only for a ride at Disney Tokyo Sea. It's the Sinbad ride.
You have not talked about this.
That ride is so good.
Really?
It is not based on a Disney movie. It's a dark ride, which means it's just like you're in a little cart or boat. In this case, it's a boat. And you kind of ride through the story.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like Small World,
mm-hmm.
Snow White's Scary Adventure, mm-hmm. Mr. Toad, all of those. That's a dark ride. And it is based on the story of Sinbad, which is not a Disney property.
So
otherwise,
it's based off
it's
of
just
like
based
the lore?
Off, yeah, just based off the Sinbad stories. And originally, it was just the sort of like bummer of a story of Sinbad. It didn't do well.
Yeah.
And so they had Alan Menken write a song for it. And then instead of Sinbad being this like just kind of opportunistic traveler looking for treasure and shit, mm-hmm. now he's this like super plucky, happy guy with a tiny tiger cub as a friend.
Cute.
And
I'm
he goes around.
That.
So instead of his crew going crazy with greed while an ogre watches them,
mm-hmm.
in this story, like, he fights off bandits that are super greedy and stealing treasure and bird eggs and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just like really plucky. And Mike and I, when we went to Tokyo recently, we were like, oh my God, we love Sinbad. And the song for it is so fucking good. And it's called Compass of Your Heart.
I'll look at listen to that too.
Yeah.
Guys,
it's
get
so
on
good.
There.
Yeah.
He kind of sounds similar. Is he like charismatic, like that hot Robin Hood fox?
Yes.
That fox is
he's
hot.
He's like,
I know that I was talking shit about furries off. Okay. I was talking shit about furries.
You're yucking people's yums.
I know. I'm yucking some yums
which
right
now. Which is like something you never do.
I know. I was talking about it with engineer Alec because our artwork for the Pugmire show is
right.
like we're dogs.
Uh huh.
And like it's been like a lot of furries are like, I like
yes,
this.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Which like if I were a furry, I would be into it. It's nice art.
Sure. Dogs.
Yeah. But I forgot why I mentioned furries.
Oh,
because that fox is hot.
Yeah.
He's hot. He's mm-hmm. hot like Simba. Simba's hot.
Simba's a little hot. Yeah.
He's kind of like the brief flash of mullet teen Simba.
Uh-huh.
And is like, that's tight. I wanna do something with that.
I have a top three Disney guys
crushes
list. Number three is the fox from Robin Hood.
He's hot.
Number two is Prince Philip from Sleeping Beauty.
He's handsome and he's nice.
Yeah.
He's gallant.
Number one is, I can never remember his name because I just haven't watched Mulan as much. But the love interest Shang. In Mulan, Shang.
He's fucking hot as shit. He's my number one.
Fucking
he's
hot.
For sure my number one.
Mm-hmm.
He's my number one for sure. Hot.
Most attracted to an animated character. Absolutely. In that instance.
Here's the thing. My number one hot. He's not
number one hot hottie
is not Disney. He's from Anastasia, Dimitri.
Oh.
We're getting a nod over there. We're getting a nod.
Oh, Alex into it?
Yeah, Alex likes it. Because here's the thing.
Alex is nodding hard.
He's charming. But here's the weird part about that film is that, like, sometimes all the characters look really bad, but sometimes they all look really fly.
Yeah. Is it DreamWorks?
WB.
DreamWorks? Oh.
Isn't it WB?
Alex.
21st Century.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It's like the part when they're on the boat.
Yeah,
and
she
comes out. I'm like, ugh.
The animation is not consistent. The animation isn't that consistent in Little Mermaid either.
No, because sometimes she looks much older and sometimes she looks like a little baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hate Prince Eric. I used to like him when I was a little girl, but I don't like him anymore.
I don't hate him. I just think he's boring.
For sure, Shang. I think it's Lee Shang. Hottest. Hot. He's number one. You know who I think is pretty hot?
Who?
The guy from Long Hair, Rapunzel. Tangled. The guy from Tangled. I thought he was kind of charming. I like those kind of like rakish, charming guys.
Yeah,
I like
you
those
like a
funny
rake.
Guys.
You like a rake who gets turned.
You know who I hate?
Who?
Beast post-transformation.
You know what? I used to, and now I appreciate him from a pre-Raphaelite art standpoint.
What does that mean?
It means like it's like an artist's era, like paintings and shit, and it's referred to as pre-Raphaelite.
Mm.
I'm not sure why. I forget.
Mm.
But that kind of profile, that kind of facial structure, hit the mic, is exactly that era.
Oh, interesting.
And I maybe more so used to, maybe a little less so after jaw surgery, had a very pre-Raphaelite profile, and I hated it.
Until you saw him.
No, but until I realized that I hated it, like, because I hated myself.
Oh.
Then I was like, no, there's a handsomeness there.
So here's why I hated it.
Sure.
Because in my mind, when he was the Beast, he could be anyone, you know, like he could look like anything.
Oh.
And he looked too much like a man. Like he looked so old, like to me that I was like, oh, like, cause I was, you know, a little girl. So I was just like, oh, he's like a dad.
Well, I think it's also like, for me, it was actually the way he looked. And that was a self-hating thing, I believe. But I think it's probably just that we grew to love Beast so much that it's like, well, who the fuck is this guy all of a sudden?
I know.
He just seems like he's somebody else entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just seemed very different. And, like, here's the thing.
Yes.
Beauty and the Beast has its issues with Stockholm Syndrome, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I don't care to think about them.
Yeah.
I want to enjoy Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually haven't watched it recently. I only have seen Omar, friend of the show, made me watch the live action song of Beast being like, and I know she'll never leave me.
Yeah, I don't like that song.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
It's
a bad song.
He's like popping out from behind columns. And like just, he's so busy. He's running all around
he's
in his
so
castle.
Busy.
He's very busy.
He's like a Richie Tinkersley Cusick character.
He is. He has to like run into one room and like touch the columns and like sing from like a window. And then he has to run into another. He's like making the rounds. And also it's like a little tricky because it's like, you know, he's all CGI and the voice is so like emotional, but like the face is not.
It's nothing.
It's like a robot. So it's kind of like, it's just very disconcerting and I did not enjoy it at all. And I was like, I don't need to see this movie, I don't think.
Yeah. Oh, the movie, not the, I was thinking Broadway show for some reason because we're talking about it. No, I fucking actively dislike the movie. Not good. It's not a good movie.
It looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like just from that.
Even just the character design. I was like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. This ain't who's that guy? Damn. He was in the TV version of Beauty and the Beast. He's like,
Ron
Perlman.
Yes.
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 This ain't no Ron Perlman as the Beast.
No.
This is like...
Get out of here, Linda Hamilton.
Should we read
Linda
this book?
Hamilton.
Should we read this
We're
story?
Talking about Poe. Get out.
Poe. Get out, Linda Hamilton. We're talking about Poe. Okay, so Brett is being cheeky this week. And he's like, we've already covered Poe's biography. So here are three haunting facts about Edgar Allan Poe's death. Are you ready to be
haunted?
Scared and haunted?
Yes.
All right. Let's see. Okay, the first fact is not haunting.
Oh, Brett's a liar. What a shock.
When he died, Poe was on his way to Philadelphia for an editing job.
Are these walls actually stretching?
Drag your bodies away from listening to Mr. Poe's haunting facts. A week before his death, his doctor advised him not to travel. Why? Oh, because he looked ill.
Also not haunting.
Not that haunting.
To be expected from a doctor.
Okay, check this out.
Yes.
When he left his doctor's office,
mm-hmm.
he took the doctor's sword cane.
Sword cane?
And accidentally left his own.
What's a sword cane? I assume just like
a cane that you can like
stick.
Pull a sword out, I bet.
Isn't that just a sword?
No, that's a sword cane.
I'm sorry.
Probably because
of course.
The scabbard probably has like
sword cane.
Like a flat bottom that you can put on the ground. Because then you'd scribble scrabble all over the place with a pointy scabbard. Okay, you get this.
Don't scribble scrabble.
Are you ready to be even more scared, Lindsay?
Yes.
Poe could not remember the location of his luggage.
Ooh. What the? Brett,
what is this list?
What is this list? Is this a story, not a list?
This is coming to us from one of our sponsors, biography.com.
Please stop advertising on the show. We don't want to have to keep reading these.
Okay. Okay, 4 days before his death.
Uh-huh.
These are not haunting.
Right.
4 days before his death, Poe was found at a polling place on a voting day. This is your reminder to vote in this
November
year's elections.
6th, correct?
Yes.
Yes. I have a doctor's appointment that morning.
I'm going to fill out my, because I usually get the by mail thing and then I drop it off day of.
I usually do that too. I haven't got mine yet.
I just got mine like two days ago.
I checked my registration.
Maybe it's in the mail still.
Mike got his.
I think something's wrong, Lizzie. Poe's cat could not live without him. This is sad.
Oh.
Hold up. Here's something, but it's drama. His enemy wrote his obituary.
Nice. Who is his enemy?
Rufus Wilmot Rufus Wilmot Griswold.
Oh my God, what a good name.
What? He wrote a lengthy obituary that was so libelous, he signed it with a pseudonym. It portrayed Poe as a mad, drunken, womanizing opium addict who based his darkest tales on personal experience. He expanded the account into a brief memoir of the author, and Griswold's distorted picture of Poe influenced popular opinion of the author for over a century. Holy shit.
Truly, truly... That's how you get your revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Dish best served dead.
Nice.
Thanks.
That's
going to be in our line of Teen Creeps books.
Dish
revenge is a dish best served dead.
And then R.L. Stine's going to call you and be like, can I put that on a book?
And I'm going to be like, no.
And he'll be like, I'll pay you
no,
$3
million. And I'll be like, yes.
Yes, you may. His attending physician dismissed reports that Poe had been drinking heavily before his death.
Okay.
His friend spread rumors that he had been drunk.
What?
Poe's hair is a collector's item.
Ew. That's pretty creepy.
This is sad. Only 7 people came to his funeral.
Oh.
His body was moved decades after his death. Oh, because he was buried in an unmarked grave. And then later, 11 years later, a cousin paid for the monument. But then the stone was destroyed by a train that crashed into the stonecarver's shop.
A train?
This is crazy. What?
Crane, I was fine with. A train.
The train. 26 years later, after his death, teachers and students raised the money for a proper monument, which was placed in a place of honor next to the cemetery gate.
How did a train, like, Was it like the coyote and Roadrunner?
Yeah, like the Roadrunner. Someone painted a...
Yeah, like the coyote tried to get the Roadrunner to run down the track, but he didn't, but a train came by.
The train came.
And hit Poe's headstone and the coyote.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
That's what happened. And then, even funnier, so his coffin is being moved by the Three Stooges, and they drop his coffin. The Three Stooges aren't doing this, but they do drop his coffin. It busts open.
The fuck?
Breaks open, and his remains, like, fall out. This okay. is crazy.
Poe clearly pissed off the fates in yeah. some way. Maybe it was by writing very boring stories.
Probably.
But for some reason, having a good reputation.
We'll see if this is boring. It's short, which I'm happy about. His wife is buried next to him nearly 40 years after her death? What?
Well, I guess that's how long it took to sort out his grave.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
One of Poe's eccentric biographers. Okay, so here's the thing.
Yes.
So
what is the thing?
Developers built over her cemetery and they were like, we're going to just move these bodies. We don't know where we're going to put them. So one of Poe's biographers was like, give me her bones. He puts them in a box under his bed for years.
Give me her bones?
Yeah. And he's
and they were
he
like,
keeps them.
Sure.
They're like, you know what? We're not going to ask any questions.
You do with these bones as you will.
Poe's death did not stop him from writing. In the 1860s, the medium Lizzie Doten published some poetry she claimed had been dictated to her by Poe's ghost.
Okay. Whatever, girl.
His fiance, Sarah Helen Whitman, after his first wife's death but before his engagement to Elmira Shelton, hired a medium to move in with her because she thought Poe's spirit was trying to communicate with her, too. And cool. those are the facts. Are you ready to do the story?
All right, let's do it.
Hop Frog by Edgar Allan Poe. I never knew anyone so keenly alive to a joke as the king was. He seemed to live only for joking.
Oh, the goober.
To tell a good story of the joke kind, and to tell it well.
I love stories of the joke kind.
Was the surest
road. Also known as funny.
Funny. To his favor. Thus it happened that his seven ministers were all noted for their accomplishments as jokers. They all took after the king, too, in being large, corpulent, oily men, as well as inimitable jokers. God. Whether people grow fat by joking.
They were an improv group. Hi, we're Hop Frog, and we need a one-word suggestion to get started.
Not food, please.
Or whether there's... I heard dildo. Thank you, dildo.
Or whether there is something in fat... What? Whether people grow fat by joking, or whether there is something in fat itself which predisposes to a joke, I've never Rude. Been quite able to determine. But certain it is that a lean joker is a rara avis in terris. Cool. You're fucking funny,
Only fat
dude.
People are funny.
This guy must be skinny, then. About the refinements, or as he called them, the ghost of wit, the king troubled himself very little. He had a special admiration for breadth in a jest, and would often put up with length for the sake of it. Over niceties wearied him. He would have preferred Rabelais' Gargantua to the Zadig of Voltaire. And upon You're the whole, right. practical jokes suited his taste far better than verbal ones. This is a nightmare court.
Yes.
It's like
no,
practical
thank
jokes.
You.
Like, why don't you drink your water? It's milk. I drank to you. What a prank. What a prank.
Good one, Your Majesty. Cool. So do you want to sit on me being deflowered by my new husband? Or...
I'm going to sit on you.
Okay. Oh. That's not a joke.
But the question is, will my bottom fit?
What?
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
That's a question for you, Kelly.
You said sit on me.
Oh,
getting
sit in on.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you know, come back here next week and we'll try
okay.
this again.
All right.
At the date of my narrative,
professing jesters had not altogether got out of fashion at court. Several of the great continental powers still retained their fools, who wore motley with caps and bells, and who were expected to be always ready with sharp witticisms at a moment's notice in consideration of the crumbs that fell from the royal table. Our king, as a matter of course, retained his fool. The fact is, he required something in the way of folly, if only to counterbalance the heavy wisdom of the seven wise men who were his ministers.
I thought the seven ministers were also hilarious.
I thought so too.
So, whatever.
Not to mention himself. His fool, or professional jester, was not only a fool, however. His value was trebled in the eyes of the king. God, you know, ancient times are not great. By the fact of his being also a dwarf and a cripple. Hate this. Dwarves were as common at court in those days as fools, and many monarchs would have found it difficult to get through their days are rather longer at court than elsewhere, without both a jester to laugh with and a dwarf to laugh at. Yeah, this guy's a piece of shit. But
so funny.
This is so funny.
So funny, Poe. Really good.
But as I have already observed, your jesters, in 99 cases out of 100, are fat, round, and unwieldy, so that it was no small source of self-gratulation that our king that, in Hopfrog, this was the fool's name, he possessed a triplicate treasure in one person. I believe the name Hopfrog was not that given to the dwarf by his sponsors at baptism, but it was conferred upon him by general consent of the several ministers.
You think?
On account of his inability to walk as other men do. They're so mean.
Oh, I think my favorite kind of humor is done at the expense of others.
Absolutely.
So fun.
It's like so funny when like you have all the power and then like another person has like way less power than you. And then you just keep belittling them. That's so funny.
And also like the world is set up utterly in your favor.
Yes.
And not in their favor.
And you never experience.
The mere fact of that is hilarious.
It's so funny. And like so no funny. Repercussions for you. That's so funny.
That's the most hilarious. That's my best kind of story that is jokes.
In fact, Hopfrog could only get along by a sort of interjectional gait, something between a leap and a wriggle, a movement that afforded illimitable amusement and, of course, consolation to the king. For, notwithstanding the protuberance of his stomach and constitutional swelling of the head, the king, by his own court, was accounted a capital figure. But although Hopfrog, through the distortion of his legs, could move only with great pain and difficulty along a road or floor, the prodigious muscular power which nature seemed to have bestowed upon his arms, by way of compensation for deficiency in the lower limbs, enabled him to perform many feats of wonderful dexterity.
That's not nature, that's just use.
That's use. At such exercises, where trees or ropes were in question, or anything else to climb. No, I hate this! At such exercises, he certainly more resembled a squirrel or a small monkey or than a frog.
I fucking hate Poe. I hate him.
I do think, I do think that this king is going to get his comeuppance.
We shall see.
We shall see. Unless it's just like, and then he laughed and laughed and laughed.
And everybody pointed and laughed and laughed and pointed.
I am not able to say with precision from what country Hopfrog originally came. It was from some barbarous region, however, that no person had ever heard of. A vast distance from the court of our king, Hopfrog and a young girl, very little less dwarfish than himself, although of exquisite proportions and a marvelous dancer.
Yeah!
Get nasty!
A young girl? So here's my story. Mm-hmm. My name's Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. I'm writing this new story. In it, I claim that all fat people are funny.
Yeah.
I imply that just being a dwarf is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And I admire the voluptuous figure of a young girl.
I think you've got an instant classic.
Awesome.
Penguin classics.
Thanks.
She had been forcibly carried off from they had been forcibly carried off from their respective homes in adjoining provinces and sent as presents to the king by one of his ever victorious generals. Under these circumstances, it is not to be wondered at that a close intimacy arose between the two little captives. Indeed, they soon became sworn friends. Hopfrog, who, although he made a great deal of sport, was by no means popular, had it not in his power to render Tripetta many services. I guess her name is Tripetta? Tripetta? But she, on account of her grace and exquisite beauty, although a dwarf,
she's also a dwarf.
She's a dwarf.
Okay. Interesting.
The
Okay. Okay. So three listeners suggested this. They are our Brett stand-ins for the episode. And fuck you.
I am really hoping that this guy get this king. I don't know. All right. Ready?
Uh-huh.
But she, on account of her grace and exquisite beauty, although a dwarf, was universally admired and petted. So she possessed much influence and never failed to use it whenever she could for the benefit of Hopfrog.
You get it.
Mm-hmm. On some grand state occasion, I forgot what, the king determined to have a masquerade. And whenever a masquerade or anything of that kind occurred at our court, then the talents, both of Hopfrog and Trippetta, were sure to be called into play.
Sure.
Hopfrog, in especial, was so inventive in the way of getting up pageants, suggesting novel characters, and arranging costumes for masked balls, that nothing could be done, it seems, without his assistance. The night appointed for the fete had arrived. A gorgeous hall had been fitted up, under Trippetta's eye, with every kind of device which could possibly give eclat to a masquerade. The whole court was in a fever of expectations. As for costumes and characters, it might well be supposed that everybody had come to a decision on such points. Many had made up their minds as to what roles they should assume, a week or even a month in advance. And, in fact, there is not a particle of indecision anywhere, except in the case of the king and his seven ministers. Why they hesitated, I could never tell, unless they did it by way of a joke. My favoritest of jokes.
I love jokes that are not doing things.
I love, like, when you forget to do something and, like, that's a joke.
You've told it.
More probably, they found it difficult, on account of being so fat, to make up their minds.
Jesus fucking Christ.
This is horrible. At all events, time flew, and as a last resort, they sent for Trippetta and Hopfrog. When the two little friends obeyed the summons of the king, they found him sitting at his wine with the seven members of his cabinet council. But the monarch appeared to be in very ill humor. He knew that Hopfrog was not fond of wine, for it excited the poor cripple almost to madness.
What?
And madness is no comfortable feeling.
Sure.
But the king loved his practical jokes.
No!
And took pleasure in forcing Hopfrog to drink. And
That's not a practical joke.
Forcing somebody to drink something they don't want to drink is not a joke. That is abuse.
Fuck that.
And as the king called it, to be merry.
Come here, Hopfrog,
said he, as the jester and his friend entered the room.
Swallow this bumper to the health of your absent friends.
Here, Hopfrog sighed.
And then let us have the benefit of your invention.
Oh, good. He's like half Edwin.
We want characters. Characters, man! Something novel out of the way. We are wearied with this everlasting sameness. Come, drink. The wine will brighten your wits.
Hopfrog endeavored, as usual, to get up a jest in reply to these advances from the king, but the effort was too much. It happened to be the poor dwarf's birthday.
Aww, Hopfrog.
And the command to drink to his absent friends forced the tears to his eyes.
No!
Many large bitter drops fell into the goblet as he took it humbly from the hand of the tyrant. Okay, so he knows the king is a shithead.
Yeah, the storyteller does.
Bah-ha-ha!
Roared the latter as the dwarf reluctantly drained the beaker.
See what a glass of good wine can do? Why, your eyes are shining already.
Oh my God.
Poor
fellow.
Seems like
he's gonna gobble him up.
Ew, yeah. His large eyes gleamed rather than shone, for the effect of wine on his excitable brain was not more powerful than instantaneous. He placed the goblet nervously on the table and looked around upon the company with a half-insane stare. They all seemed highly amused at the success of the king's joke, and joke is in quotes.
Oh, good. You're forgiven, Poe.
And now to business, said the prime minister, a very fat man.
We
get it. You already said that they're fat.
We know.
Yes, said the king. Come lend us your assistant. Characters, my fine fellow. We stand in need of characters. All of us. Ha, ha, ha.
Okay, I get it. By characters, they mean costumes. Mm.
And this was seriously meant as a joke. Oh. His laugh was chorused by the seven. Hopfrog also laughed, although feebly and somewhat vacantly.
Come, come,
said the king impatiently.
Have you nothing to suggest?
I've gotten you drunk. Why can't your brain work the same? Quick thinking is a part of alcohol consumption.
I am endeavoring to think of something novel, replied the dwarf, abstractedly, for he was quite bewildered by the wine.
Endeavoring? Said the tyrant fiercely. What do you mean by that? Ah, I perceive. You are Thulky and want more wine. Here.
No, you little bitch.
Drink this.
No.
And he poured out another goblet full.
No.
And offered it to the cripple.
Being red wine hungover is the worst. It
Headache.
Is so terrible.
Oh, you got cotton in your brain.
Your vomit is red.
Oh, red, red, red. Who merely gazed at it, gasping for breath.
Drink, I say, shouted the monster, or by the fiends.
The dwarf hesitated. The king grew purple with rage. The courtiers smirked. Trippetta, pale as a corpse, advanced to the monarch's seat and, falling on her knees before him, implored him to spare her friend. The tyrant regarded her for some moments in evident wonder at her audacity. He seemed quite at a loss at what to do or say, how most becomingly to express his indignation. At last, without uttering a syllable, he pushed her violently from him and threw the contents of the brimming goblet in her face.
No!
The poor girl got up the best she could and, not even daring to sigh, resumed her position at the foot of the table.
Ugh.
There was a dead silence for about half a minute, during which the falling of a leaf or of a feather might have been heard.
Someone was like, hilarious practical joke.
Oh, sir. Clap, huzzah.
Pushing is the hilariousness.
It was interrupted by a low but harsh and protracted grating sound, which seemed to come at once from every corner of the room.
What are you making that noise for?
Demanded the king, turning furiously to the dwarf. The latter seemed to have recovered in great measure from his intoxication, and looking fixedly, but quietly into the tyrant's face, merely ejaculated,
I? How could it have been me?
The sound appeared to have come from without, observed one of the courtiers. I fancy it was the parrot at the window, whetting his bill upon the cage wires.
Like they literally can't tell what the sound even was.
They can't even tell where it's coming from.
It's like, I think it was an alarm clock come from the bowels of the castle, or perhaps the tweeting of a bird.
True,
replied the monarch, as if much relieved by the suggestion.
But on the honor of a knight, I could have sworn it was the gritting of this vagabond's teeth.
Hereupon, the dwarf laughed. The king was too confirmed a joker to object to anyone's laughing. So he's fucking pissed.
He's like, I'm so funny. This is a joke.
He thinks that somebody's like fucking with him. He thinks it was the dwarf. The dwarf stops laughing. He's like, well, I can't begrudge a man is laughing because that is how much I love joking.
He's like, look, a joke is a joke. And I understand if you got to laugh, you got to laugh.
Yeah, let it go. And displayed a set of large, powerful, and very repulsive teeth.
Nice.
Moreover, he avowed his perfect willingness to swallow as much wine as desired. The monarch was pacified, and having drained another bumper with no very perceptible ill effect, Hop Frog entered at once and with spirit into the plans for the masquerade. Something is into it. I cannot tell what was the association of idea, observed he very tranquilly, and as if he had never tasted wine in his life, but just after your majesty had struck the girl and thrown the wine in her face, just after your majesty had done this, and while the parrot was making that odd noise outside the window, there came into my mind a capital diversion. One of my own country frolics, often enacted among us at our masquerades, but here it will be new altogether. Unfortunately, however, it requires a company of 8 persons, and here we are, cried the king, laughing at his acute discovery of the coincidence.
I'm picturing him, like, clapping his hands.
Yeah. Here we are. 8th to a fraction, and I my 7 ministers. Come, what is the diversion? We call it, replied the cripple, the 8 chained orangutans. And I would just as Lindsay, that this is spelled O-U-R-A-N-G-O-U-T-A-N-G-S. Orang orangutans.
Orangutans. Also, okay, the eight-chained orangutans, this motherfucker is going to make them do a human centipede. He's going to be like, we're going to do eight-chained orangutans. It's going to be really fun.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I'm just going to sell your lips to my boo hole.
Yeah, so just line up on your hands and knees.
I'm going to be first.
And it really is excellent sport, if well enacted. We will enact it, remarked the king, drawing himself up and lowering his eyelids. The beauty of the game, continued Hop Frog, lies in the fright it occasions among the women.
What?
This story just got so good.
Oh, no.
Capital, roared in chorus the monarch and his ministry. I will equip you as orangutans, proceeded the dwarf. Leave all that to me. The resemblance shall be so striking that the company of masqueraders will take you for real beasts. And, of course, they will be as much terrified as astonished. Oh, this is exquisite, exclaimed the king. Hop Frog, I will make a man of you. What the fuck does that even mean? The chains are for the purpose of increasing the confusion by their jangling. You are supposed to have escaped en masse from your keepers. Your Majesty cannot conceive the effect produced at a masquerade by eight chained orangutans, imagined to be real ones by most of the company, and rushing in with savage cries among the crowd of delicately and gorgeously habited men and women. The contrast is inimitable.
So, like, a really fun part of this is, like, so when they're attacking you, like, just, like, commit to the bit.
Yeah, so the best part about it, I think, is the contrast between the normal, like, prettiness of them and then just, like, the horrifying, just, like, jailed appearance of you in which you are jailed.
And, like... This is just for the look, so like it's fun. Just to commit it, but these chains will be real. Yeah. Don't freak out.
Yeah, don't freak out. I will be locking them and I will hold the key. Also, I can't stress enough that like you will literally look like orangutans and no one will be able to tell you're the king.
And like, I'm going to say something like really fun, like, like when you guys come in, I'm going to be like, help, the orangutans have escaped, like kill them.
Like, oh, quick, help me wrangle them so that we can kill them.
And, like, you should just, like, act just really like, fucking crazy.
Yeah, just, like, start throwing your own shit.
Yeah, like,
just like, throw like, your own
if
shit.
If you don't have to shit, like, you have to make it work.
Yeah, just find some mud.
Just, like, push really hard.
Find some mud and yell, this is my shit.
Yeah.
And then throw it at people.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, why is that orangutan talking? But it's going to be so crazy that they won't
care. It's going to be so much chaos. So they'll much buy chaos. Into
just
it.
Chaos, chaos. It must be, said the king. And the council arose hurriedly as it was growing late to put in the execution of the scheme of Hop Frog. His mode of equipping the party as orangutans was very simple, but effective enough for his purposes. The animals in question had, at the epoch of my story, very rarely been seen in any part of the civilized world, fuck you, and as the imitations made by the dwarf were sufficiently beast-like and more than sufficiently hideous, their truthfulness to nature was thus thought to be secured. The king and his ministers were first encased in tight-fitting stockinette shirts and drawers. They were then saturated with tar.
Okay.
Like an orangutan is.
I'm sorry. Yes? I'm having a fucking panic attack. With how hot they must be feeling. Like, this is horrible.
Then he threw feathers on them.
Like, this is just so, like...
Also, then he tied their hands and ankles to a large stick.
He put their feet in concrete and shoved them in the ocean.
Yeah. And then just like this super fun thing, like he brought out crosses he'd made of wood and then he just like nailed their palms to them and then like bound their feet at the bottom.
It was just like really fun.
It was just like such a good costume. At this stage of the process, someone of the party suggested feathers. Are you fucking kidding me?
What?
They do not know what orangutans look like.
Orangutans
they
don't
look
have feathers.
Like chickens.
They look like chickens.
Oh, no. Oh, this is a good suggestion. Thank you, three listeners.
Yes, thank you.
But the suggestion was at once overruled by the dwarf, who soon convinced the eight by ocular demonstration that the hair of such a brute as the orangutan was much more efficiently represented by flax.
True.
A thick coating of the latter was accordingly plastered upon the coating of tar. A long chain. Yeah, like for real. Tar is hot.
Yeah.
What in God's name?
Also, like, this is taking so long. Like, the party has already started.
Yes. Also, imagine trying to get tar off of you.
You can't.
You can't. First, it was passed about the waist of the king and tied. Then about another of the party and also tied. Then about all successively in the same manner. When this chaining arrangement was complete and the party stood as far apart from each other as possible, they formed a circle. And to make all things appear natural, Hop Frog passed the residue of the chain in two diameters at right angles across the circle after the fashion adopted at the present day by those who capture chimpanzees or other large apes in Borneo.
He is like making a cat's cradle of this chain. What the hell? This is crazy.
The grand saloon in which the masquerade was to take place was a circular room, very lofty, and receiving the light of the sun only through a single window at the top. At night, the season for which the apartment was especially designed, it was illuminated principally by a large chandelier, depending by a chain from the center of the skylight, and lowered or elevated by means of a counterbalance as usual. But in order not to look unsightly, this ladder passed outside the cupola and over the roof. My God, is he going to fucking hang them like chimps?
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ. The arrangements of the
room.
He's
really good at climbing, too.
He's so good at climbing because of his strong dwarf arms, which is like an okay thing to say.
Wait, is hanging like how hang them like chimps? Is that how they
like by their wrists or something?
Is that how you kill?
No, I think
chimpanzees.
I'm guessing he's just gonna do it.
You know, one time when I was a little kid and I'm still scarred,
I killed a chimpanzee. I killed a chimpanzee.
No, I was in a museum and they were having a photography exhibition, and one of them was like a photographer that had taken pictures of like poachers and like what they'd done, and it was like a photo of a dead family of chimpanzees, and I remember like seeing that and being like wanting to vomit. And I still can see it so clearly in my mind today. And it was like 15 years ago.
I would
no,
love.
No, oh God, more, 20 years ago.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
And I would love nothing more than to hold a little baby chimp and have that chimp like gently grab onto my finger with his little hand.
I want him to be playing with a rattle.
Oh, so cute.
So cute.
The arrangements of the room had been left to Trippetta's superintendence, but in some particulars, it seems, she had been guided by the calmer judgment of her friend the dwarf. At his suggestion, it was that, on this occasion, the chandelier was removed. Its waxen drippings, which in weather so warm was quite impossible to prevent, would have been seriously detrimental to the rich dresses of the guests, who, on account of the crowded state of the saloon, could not all be expected to keep from out its center. That is to say, from under the chandelier. Additional sconces were set in various parts of the hall, out from the war, and a flambeau emitting sweet odor was placed in the right hand of each of the curtains that stood against the wall, some 50 or 60 altogether. The 8 orang-outangs, taking Hop Frog's advice. What's crazy is that he, like, his thing, it's referred to as orang-outangs, but, like, chimpanzees, totally normal.
That's weird.
Whatever. The 8 orang-outangs, taking Hop Frog's advice, waited patiently until midnight, when the room was thoroughly filled with masqueraders, before making their appearance. No sooner had the clock ceased striking, however, than they rushed, or rather rolled in, because they're fat. Because
they're fat.
So funny. Not,
oh my God, yay, not offensive
at all. Altogether, for the impediments of their chains caused most of the party to fall and all to stumble as they entered. The excitement among the masqueraders was prodigious and filled the heart of the king with glee. As had been anticipated, there were not a few of the guests who supposed the ferocious-looking creatures to be beasts of some kind in reality, if not precisely orang-outangs. Many of the women swooned with affright, and had not the king taken the precaution to exclude all weapons from the saloon, his party might have soon expiated their frolic in their blood. As it was, a general rush was made for the doors, but the king had ordered them to be locked immediately upon
what?
His entrance.
This is not a joke.
Oh, shit. This could be a fucking bloodbath stampede.
Yes,
this is like a kingdom-wide Saw.
Yeah. This is like Saw mixed with that part in Lion King where the dad dies.
and at the dwarf's suggestion, the keys had been deposited with him. Yeah, I get it, Hop Frog.
While the tumult was
at its height and each masquerader attentive only to his own safety, for, in fact, while there was much real danger from the pressure of the excited crowd, the chain by which the chandelier ordinarily hung and which had been drawn up on its removal might have been seen very gradually to descend until its hooked extremity came within 3 feet of the floor. Soon after this, the king and his 7 friends, having reeled about the hall in all directions, found themselves at length in its center and, of course, in immediate contact with the chain. While they were thus situated, the dwarf, who had followed noiselessly at their heels, inciting them to keep up the commotion, took hold of their own chain at the intersection of the two portions which cross the circle diametrically and at right angles.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Here we go. Here we go.
Here, with the rapidity of thought, he inserted the hook from which the chandelier had been wont to depend, and in an instant, by some unseen agency, the chandelier chain was drawn so far upward as to take the hook out of reach and, as an inevitable consequence, to drag the orangutans together in close connection and face to face.
Their butts are out.
Face to face.
They're all face to face, but their butts are out to the world.
Their little butts are out to the world.
Their butts are out.
The masqueraders by this time had recovered in some measure from their alarm and beginning to regard the whole matter as a well-contrived pleasantry. Okay, so he didn't hang them.
Dang. Lame. I was hoping, you know what, now this is going to turn into like an Eyes Wide Shut party.
Kill that king.
like, yeah, their butts are out. Fuck yeah, give me my cat of nine
tails. Get my mask on. No one can know who I am, so I can do whatever. It's
do
like
whatever.
The purge, but not killing.
It's the purge, but sex.
It's the purge, but fucking. Blah, blah, blah. And beginning to regard the whole matter as a well-contrived pleasantry, set up a loud shout of laughter at the predicament of the apes. I mean, leave them to me, now screamed Hop Frog, his shrill voice making itself easily heard all through all the din. Leave them to me. I fancy I know them. If I can only get a good look at them, I can soon tell who they are. Here, scrambling over the heads of the crowd, he managed to get to the wall. When seizing a flambeau from one of the caryatides, he returned as he went to the center of the room, leaping with the agility of a monkey upon the king's head, and thence clambered a few feet up the chain, holding down the torch to examine the group of orangutans, and still screaming, I shall soon find out who they are! And now, while the whole assembly, the apes included, were convulsed with laughter, the jester suddenly uttered a shrill whistle. When the chain flew violently up for about 30 feet, there you go.
There we go.
Dragging with it the dismayed and struggling orangutans and leaving them suspended in midair between the skylight and the floor. Hop Frog, clinging to the chain as it rose, still maintained his relative position in respect to the ape maskers and still, as if nothing were the matter, continued to thrust his torch down toward them as though endeavoring to discover who they were. So thoroughly astonished was the whole company at this ascent that a dead silence of about a minute's duration ensued. It was broken by just such a low, harsh, grating sound as had before attracted the attention of the king and his counselors when the former threw the wine in the face of Trippetta. But on the present occasion, there could be no question as to whence the sound issued. It came from the fang-like teeth of the dwarf who ground them and gnashed them as he foamed at the mouth.
What?
And glared with an expression of maniacal rage, into the upturned countenances of the king and his 7 companions. Aha! Said at length the infuriated jester. Aha! I begin to see who these people are now. Here, pretending to scrutinize the king more closely, he held the flambeau to the flaxen coat which enveloped him.
He's lighting the one fire. Lighting the one fire.
Instantly burst into a sheet of vivid flame.
Do it! Oh my God!
Do it, Hop Frog! In less than half a minute, the whole 8 orangutans were blazing fiercely amid the shrieks of the multitude who gazed at them from below, horror-stricken and without the power to render them the slightest assistance. This is like the best post story.
This is the best post story.
Why do we
ever
not know it? At length, the flames suddenly increasing in virulence. Virulence, forced the jester to climb gesture to climb higher up the chain to be out of their reach, and as he made this movement, the crowd again sank for a brief instant into silence. The dwarf seized his opportunity and once more spoke. "I now see distinctly," he said, "what manner of people these maskers are. They are a great king and his 7 privy counselors, a king who does not scruple to strike a defenseless girl, and his 7 counselors who abet him in the outrage. As for myself, I am simply Hopfrog the Jester, and this is my last jest." It's such a good one. It's so funny.
And they're like, oh,
so, and everyone's like, oh. And everyone on fire is like, what a good practical joke. Owing to the high combustibility of both the flax and the tar to which it adhered, the dwarf had scarcely made an end of his brief speech before the work of vengeance was complete. The 8 corpses swung in their chains, a fetid, blackened, hideous, and indistinguishable mass. The cripple hurled his torch at them, clambered leisurely to the ceiling, and disappeared through the skylight. It is supposed that Trippetta, stationed on the roof of the saloon, had been the accomplice of her friend in his fiery revenge, and that, together, they effected their escape to their own country, for neither was seen again.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
This is some Kingslayer shit.
King.
Love
Kill that king.
Oh.
That was good.
That was juicy.
That was a good story.
That was a really good story.
That's easily the best Poe story I've ever read.
Yeah, for sure.
That was the most interesting, like, action-oriented Poe story. Why are we always talking about, like, Black Cat or Cask of Amontillado or what's the big one? Telltale Heart.
Do not ask for whom the bell tolls, right?
No. Or, that's not.
Who is that?
Nope.
Who is that? Another man.
That's a poem and then became a Hemingway title.
That's what it is. Okay.
Oh, it's not Poe. It's Hemingway.
Oh, it's not Poe. It's a poem that then became a Hemingway story. Yeah.
Good shit.
This was really good.
Hell yeah. You see what happens when Brett doesn't choose the story?
Brett's gonna like.
Fuck you for producing this show, Brett.
Brett's gonna like make us wear like fun costumes for this Halloween and then light us on fire.
And we will have had it coming.
Yeah, and we'll be like, you know what? That's a funny joke.
Fair.
That's a very funny joke.
This is super funny.
This is really funny.
Like, if you're laughing, I can't begrudge you that laugh.
You know what?
No matter Props. What's causing it.
Props. Wow. This is a great story.
Thank you, guys, listeners.
Thank you, listeners, for suggesting. If you want to suggest a story for us, you can go to our Twitter. We have a link to our form, which you can suggest short stories to us.
That is pinned to the top of our profile page. Just remember that it has to be in the public domain. Nothing that is under current copyright.
And nothing too long.
And about like what, 20 or 10 pages?
14 or less, I would say. Nothing over 4. Like 14 is long.
Something so that's 12 nicely or split shorter. Between 3 people.
Yeah. This was great. This was about 5 pages, in case you guys are wondering. It was perfect. I'd say 10 pages and under is sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. But you can go as high as 14 if the story deserves it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Thank you, guys.
If you want to help out the podcast,
yes,
please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and write a review. That would be very helpful. And recommend us to your friends.
Yes. You know. Let everybody know.
Bosses, coworkers, mothers, daughters, sisters, brothers, fathers, uncles.
Enemies.
Enemies. Definitely enemies.
People that you like, if you saw them in public, like you know them well enough that you could say hi, but you don't know them well enough that you want to.
Yeah.
So you kind of just both pretend that you don't see each other, even though you're literally 5 feet away from each other.
That person. For
that
sure.
person. Tell them.
Tell them. Tell all of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We will hang out with you guys next week. Oh, actually, we're at Public Domain Pod on all social media. So if you want to find us anywhere, that's what that is.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to do a quick just like shout out.
Please, by all means.
I wanted to shout out some of our listeners. So we looked into our data. So we would like to shout out our one listener in Ecuador. Yes. Our one listener in Germany, yes. Our one listener in Norway, our one listener in Barbados, and our one listener in Israel. If you reside in that country, you are it.
You're it. That's
you're our listener.
And so we're saying,
love you.
We love
thank
you.
Thank you. Also, these next one, two people. Croatia, India, Italy, Mexico, Netherlands, Poland, Turkey, Austria, Brazil, Denmark, and Spain. There are two of you. Find each other, be friends.
Yeah. I think there's a missed opportunity for a real moment for
definitely.
You guys.
Yeah. Seek each other out.
Once they already know each other. They're enemies.
That would be.
There are those people that
those
pretend
people
not to
the street.
See. Yeah, they pretend not to see each other.
Aww, thank well, you for doing that before
thanks,
we suggested
yeah, thanks
it.
Thanks for telling each yeah. other. well, we'll hang out with you guys next week. Thanks for it all. Because I wanted to, I you always say it. And
I was
going
to leave
it
to you
really?
To say it. Okay. So we're about to say our catchphrase. We don't know if you know that it's a cute thing that we did.
Yeah.
And it's short for literature. Here it comes. Keep it lit.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.